my investing philosophy has been heavily influenced by a gentleman named Howard Marks, and he wrote this book called The Most Important Thing. He's a like a world famous bond and equities trader, or investor rather. And he talks about he made a fortune, a killing in junk bonds, like so low quality assets.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today we have a very special guest, Chihiro Kurokawa. Chihiro, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Awesome. So Chihiro has accomplished a lot in the last couple of years, including just recently leaving his corporate job. So I'll let him tell you about that. But Chihiro founded his firm in 2017 and has since acquired, owned, and operated three multifamily properties, two of which have property gone full cycle. So go ahead and tell us, please give us a little color on your background and how you got into the multifamily space and why.
Absolutely. Just really quickly, the third one is pending. We're in an acquisition of a third right now. So I just want to clarify that. It may have been acquired by the time we air, but anyway.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, so I graduated from UCLA Anderson in 2015. And really at that time was just looking to get into analytics and found a job working in marketing analytics at a blue chip company. And so started there in 2015 after graduation. But shortly thereafter, I was kind of doing a bit of a gut check. I had gotten engaged in 2016. So I'm thinking about marriage, raising a family, potentially putting a child through college, and then funding me and my wife's retirement. I'm thinking like, how the heck am I going to do this with a corporate job? I felt like the prospects weren't great. So I knew I had to get into something. And that vehicle for me has been commercial real estate, specifically multifamily. So it was the very beginning of 2017 where I decided I have a dream. It's to become a multifamily owner operator, and I'm going to figure out how to do it. Fast forward a little over a year, and I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but I did get some traction. One major step I took was hiring a mentor who was pretty helpful for me in putting me in an environment where I'm surrounded by like-minded people. Hooking me up with his vendors, like mortgage broker, attorney, that sort of a thing. So that was very helpful, gave me some important resources. And so fast forward about 2 years from when I made that commitment to become a multifamily investor, I finally bought my first deal, which was a 128 unit value add multifamily property in a tertiary market called Abilene, Texas. And that property went well. We were well capitalized and put about $1.3 million in CapEx into the property. And then we came to a point where we needed some source of liquidity. So we either needed to refi or find some sort of debt or try to sell the thing. And this was last year during COVID. So some of the lending requirements through Fannie Mae were a little challenging at that time. So we opted for the sale route, sold that in December last year. So about 6 months ago. And in the meantime, did a distressed 248 unit property here in Dallas as well. Bought that one in September of 2019. And we're currently in the process of selling that property. So that's kind of getting us up more or less up to date. And as I mentioned, we are in the process of acquiring a 124 unit as well. We're trying to get that under contract in the next few or several days.
Well, that is very awesome to hear about how you've been taking massive action in the last couple of years. Will you take us back and can you touch on what your corporate career was and what your motivation was a little bit more about, what your motivation was to leave that and go into multifamily?
Mm-hmm. You know, the first year of the analytics job was fantastic. I was learning a lot, felt very challenged. But after about a year, I felt like I had kind of learned what I needed to know to do the job. And I don't feel comfortable just being in cruise control for very long. I need a little more challenge. So that was a big impetus for me to seek more challenge and to address some of the financial goals that I mentioned a few minutes ago. So I would say that was kind of motivation number one. Secondly, I want to do something that excites me, that I'm passionate about, that affords me the ability to call my own shots. And that's very difficult to do in a massive Fortune 50, Fortune 10 company. There's a lot of layers of management bureaucracy, right? So once I tasted that level of accountability that you have as an entrepreneur, where you're like, all right, every single decision is going to needs to either make me money or save me expenses. And it's all about results and accountability. That is both a scary and rewarding experience that's very different from the corporate environment. So once I had that taste, I was not looking back.
For sure. As a fellow MBA turned entrepreneur, I completely can, relate to some of what you're saying. So, and just to kind of circle back on something that you mentioned about this, the financial piece, did you feel that it sounds like you felt like perhaps you're weren't going to be able to earn the earning potential in the corporate world at Toyota wasn't as much as it would be with entrepreneurship. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think to make real, two things about making real money, what I call real money, like financial independence kind of money. One is you don't make real money without taking risk. You have to put it out there. You got to risk it or you're not going to make real money. And the other one is you need equity. Collecting a salary, you have no equity, and you can save that money and convert it into equity somehow, be it through real estate or putting it into the stock market. But the point is, like, the act of you working in and of itself doesn't create any sort of equity at all. It's incumbent on you to convert that, right? Well, real estate is all about acquiring equity and building it. And so, or not just real estate, if you're going to be an entrepreneur and start up some sort of cash flowing business, you are generating equity, right? And so those two things, I think conceptually people have to think about, like, how am I going to make real money? Like, I got to get equity. There's just no other way around it, in my opinion.
For sure. Makes total sense. And so when you were working in corporate, what was it that kind of turned you on to multifamily in the first place?
So Dallas, very unique market, right? This is one of the shining stars in this entire country as far as multifamily and perhaps multiple real estate asset classes, right? And so there is a fair number of meetups going on out here in Dallas. So that was my first real exposure, like meeting, for lack of a better phrase, like everyday Joe Schmoes who are leading these meetups. And they're like, oh yeah, I have 500 units across four properties. And I'm like, who's this guy? And if he can do it, why can't I do it? So that was my first exposure, was meetups.
Awesome. So let's talk about what was kind of getting in your way with getting traction that first year. I know you said that, a year into it, you hadn't quite gotten traction. Why do you think that was?
Multifamily's hard. It's still hard. I've done a couple deals, about to do a third. It's still very difficult. But that first one is tremendously hard. You don't have any credibility. There's a gazillion people wanting to get in, right? So establishing credibility with the broker who's listing a deal, and he or she is, let's say, talking to 100 prospects. Out of those, 80 don't own any doors at all. So then out of those 80, how do I make myself stand out versus the other 79, right? And so part of that is, networking and going to conferences and trying to buy these people drinks and coffee and whatnot. But it's just tough. You don't have credibility. So for me, aligning myself with a mentor who had thousands of doors, that gave me credibility, because I would say, hey, broker, if you award me this deal, code, I'm going to GP this deal. My partner is going to be this guy who has 4,000 doors. So you need some sort of in, because it is kind of an unfair game, real estate, And so you got to learn to play that game somehow, some way, whether it's by a mentor or bringing a lot of capital, or somehow you got to provide value, or these people who sell the deals, who have control over the deals, people who are capable of executing on an acquisition and operating, none of those people will take you seriously unless you have some sort of way to provide value.
Definitely. Awesome. So a lot of people talk about the law of the first deal, how it can be really hard to get your first deal done, and then everything starts to flow more smoothly after that. So you've obviously done your first deal. Tell us how you found it and just give us a little bit of the story of that deal.
Yeah. So this was, we're going back to 2018 now. It was late summer. The deal was listed, just a regular listed deal through a major brokerage. And I liked it because it was in a tertiary market, but it's still within driving distance of where I live, about 4 hours from where I live. So I liked the tertiary market because it's just a little bit less competitive than in a major metro like Dallas that has a lot of attention on it. So that was my motivation for going out there to Abilene. And it's not like a teeny tiny place. The population, I believe, is 120,000, if I remember correctly, in the city of Abilene. And the metro itself is about 170,000. So it's not like a really small town. But anyhow, just started chasing the deal. You know, I toured it. And I liken the process of real estate to, you don't really have big wins. You just keep knocking down dominoes. And then one by one, process kind of accumulates. So, you know, domino number one is downloading the financials from the broker, and domino two might be calling the broker and finding out, what the whisper price is going to be. So one by one, you keep doing this stuff and you build momentum. Eventually, I'm touring the deal located. I found a property manager who's willing to tour the deal with me to put their eyes on it. I found a lender, and all of these incremental steps are being made. And lo and behold, at some point, I got the offer in and I made it into best and final. So then at that point, it's time to do a real gut check and think about, okay, what's the absolute highest amount I can afford and meet the hurdles that I have set, the expectations I've set for my investors. And so that's what I did, put in my best and final offer. And fortunately, I won that deal.
Awesome. Yeah, I like how you describe this idea of the dominoes. And I mean, I suppose with every deal that you look at, you may knock down only one domino or maybe two. And then it's just like trying to keep finding that deal where you can actually get the whole line of dominoes to knock down. This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah. And to add to that, Suja, you know, even after I won the deal, then it's like people are congratulating me, but then I'm like, oh, wait, I got to raise $2.9 million now. And then I close the deal and people are like, congratulations. But then now I've got to operate this thing. Now I've got to spend, you know, we had a $1.6 million CapEx budget. Like I need to deploy that capital effectively and efficiently in order to generate returns. So those congratulations, while they're very appreciated, like they felt a little hollow to me because I'm like, man, I got a lot of work to do. And then even after I spent that $1.3 million, okay, we made the decision to sell. But then at that point, I'm still like, okay, shoot, like, is it going to sell? We get under contract. Oh, man, can this guy who's buying it, can he execute? Will he be able to close? So I really didn't feel great about it until we sold the deal and the money was wired. Then I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go out to dinner now with my wife. Like, we'll celebrate something.
That is awesome. I mean, such a great story, you know, and if it was like 2 or 3 years from now, probably you might not, or maybe you might not remember how that first deal felt. So, and how did the second deal feel after going through that? Do you feel like it was like you were still kind of nervous at every step? Did it feel a little easier?
It's a little easier in the sense that, like, I know what steps to take. There were fewer things, for example, that were like net new to me. Like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, there's less of those things, right? But interestingly, every deal has these weird issues. Like, we had an investor who represented 25% of our entire equity raise for that second deal, seven-figure investor, and they didn't get their money wired in until like the day of, like literally the last day they could possibly send it in, amongst other things, you know? So there's always like these issues that come up with deals. It seems inevitable. Like there's always some sort of quirk and you've got to figure out how to roll with the punches and just adapt. A similar thing happened with the disposition of that first deal too, the 128 unit. We were trying to sell it in December. And in mid-December, Manhattan, New York City got like, I don't know, 18 inches of snow or something. Like it was a crazy amount of snow. Manhattan shut down. Well, one of my partners was living in the Philippines at the time. So he's got to figure out how to get something notarized when all the embassies are closed because of COVID. And then he FedExes it from Manila and it's supposed to arrive on, I don't know, Wednesday or something in New York City. But of course, there's this blizzard. So it's like 2-3 days late. We have to get an extension. Potentially could have lost the sale because of snow. So crazy, crazy things just happen. It's seems to always be the case.
Yeah, it's, I can relate to closings just being nail biting. It seems like any closing, any industry, any asset class, it's just always a stressful day or multiple days. So it's part of the game, I suppose, but maybe, I don't know. I keep hoping that it'll maybe get a little easier over time. So there's talk about multifamily being hard from a pricing perspective in these days and for quite a while now, but people are still buying and selling deals, obviously. And you were able to turn this property around in 2 years or something like that. What would you say about pricing? And do you have any concerns? Is it, how did you approach that with your first deal and your second deal?
Yeah. So one thing that is a very different characteristic about those two deals is the first one was a value add deal, middle of the fairway kind of a deal. The second one was distressed. It was 60 something percent occupied when we bought it, I think 68 or 69. And then at its worst, it dropped down to the high 50s in occupancy, which is very scary. You know, you're losing money every month at that point, you know? And so then the question is like, all right, well, there's not a lot of distress in multifamily, especially in Dallas. So how did you find it and why did you even go after it? Well, my investing philosophy has been heavily influenced by a gentleman named Howard Marks, and he wrote this book called The Most Important Thing. He's a world famous bond and equities trader or investor rather. And he talks about, he made a fortune, a killing in junk bonds, like so low quality assets, right? And what he was, one of the things that really stuck with me is it's not the quality of the asset that matters. It's whether you're getting a discount, like, are you buying an undervalued asset? And distressed multifamily is exactly that. Not many people have the stones to go after a 65% occupied property. They know it's going to be a lot of work. They know there's going to be some residents that are probably of poor quality that wouldn't meet the criteria to be accepted into some other stabilized multifamily, right? So there's a lot of issues that come with chasing a deal like that. And not a lot of people are going to want to do that because it's more work. But fundamentally, you know, investing is about the more value you create, the more you're going to get paid, right? So we took a place that was in poor shape, both operationally and physically, put a ton of work, ton of money into it. And now it's a stabilized property at 94% occupancy. So now the pool of people who want to buy that property or who want to own it is going to be much greater, right? So coming back to your question, like, yeah, multifamily is really expensive right now. Cap rates have compressed. And so the way that I've decided to mitigate that is by going after distressed properties, because I know that I can partner with the right people who have tremendous experience and capabilities in construction management, operationally taking a distressed property to stabilization. And that stuff, I can be very comfortable with my internal team executing upon that. What I don't feel comfortable with is predicting whether or not cap rates are going to continue to compress, whether or not pricing is going to remain elevated. I don't know that that's going to be the case. And so that's why I chase these more challenging deals, because I do not want to lose my investors' money, period.
For sure. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, so this second property, that was the distressed one, correct?
So that's been my way of approaching the market climate today. I won't always be doing distress, but right now that's where I'm looking.
So, and you've also, or you're, it's either sold or about to be sold. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. We're not under contract yet, but yeah, we're under LOI to sell it.
Okay. And so that turnaround took how long?
So we bought that in September of 19. So it's about a year and a half right now of ownership.
I mean, that's pretty cool to go from 60 or whatever percent and now you're at 94. Is that right?
Yeah. 94. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have?
It's a long journey.
Yeah. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what it took to turn that property around?
Yeah. First thing I'll say is there have not been any watershed moments during that 20 whatever months. It's all incremental progress. I am happy to report that in 11 out of the last 12 months, we've increased revenues. So we've been setting a record revenue, you know, almost every single month for the past year. However, it's not like that revenue is going through the roof, right? Like it's just every month, you know, we're making $5,000, $10,000 more, you know, and what it takes is having a fantastic property management team. We did start out with the wrong property management and we did have to let them go actually. So we had a local company for about the first 6 months. And I'll tell you what, Suja, this is a really big learning for me, but we gave them too long of a leash. Like, it was apparent probably after 2 months that they were not the right fit. And by 3 months, an absolute longest by 4 months, we should have let them go. But this is a learning for me, you know, I'm still new in this game. So be that as it may, for 6 months, we had the wrong property management team, put the new one in, and that was tremendously impactful decision on our part. Another important part of this deal turnaround has been having the right partners. I think that is, I'd like to think I'm decently good at that, like determining how best to put a team together. So one of my partners on that deal, he's very, very experienced and he's done distressed deals, has in-house construction. And so we leveraged that, his capabilities, and we're able to get this heavy lift construction done relatively quickly and do a really serious physical transformation, a complete transformation on the exterior. Made it from a very dark, kind of dreary property that was browns and greens into more contemporary light versus dark color contrast that is just way more aesthetically pleasing. So we did things like that and, you know, just made steady operational improvements. And of course, you know, you got to renovate interiors. So, you know, we've been consistently doing that several units a month to garner rent increases.
Awesome. Well, there's a lot of lessons there and just so much good stuff. I mean, I think it's really what you said about this incremental progress is really key when we're thinking about how these things actually end up making sense, you know, because a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, you know, bought it for this and sold it for that. But it's like, well, how does that actually happen? And it just seems like it makes sense that like, oh, it doesn't happen at once. Like it happens little by little by implementing systems and it's a process that has to play out. And so very interesting.
Yeah. It's not like, to use your background as a metaphor here, like it's not like climbing a mountain where you hit a peak because you got a deal or because you sold a deal. It's more like you're on a hamster wheel. You get better and better at analyzing deals, at operating them. And it's just, yeah, I love how you phrase it. It's about incremental progress.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Chihiro. Ton of value there. Love hearing your story. Definitely can't wait to see what you're doing in even 6 months. So why don't you take a minute and tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share?
Absolutely. Thank you again for hosting me. And my website is blackriverep.com. That's Blackriver, E as in equity, P as in partners.com. And you can reach out to me there. I'm also on social media. You can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm a fan of LinkedIn. Been listening to Gary Vee a lot. And yeah, just reach out to me. I'm happy to chat to anybody who is curious about what I do.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chihiro. Have a great day. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.